Genesis chapter 45, verses 1 through 18. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him, because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." When they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, 'This is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you, your children and grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have. I will provide for you there, because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute. You can see for yourselves, and so can my brother Benjamin, that it is really I who am speaking to you. Tell my father about all the honor accorded me in Egypt, and about everything you have seen, and bring my father down here quickly.' Then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept. And Benjamin embraced him, weeping. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. Afterwards, his brothers talked with him. When the news reached Pharaoh's palace that Joseph's brothers had come, Pharaoh and all his officials were pleased. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Tell your brothers, do this. Load your animals and return to the land of Canaan, and bring your father and your families back to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you can enjoy the fat of the land." This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated.
I have three older sisters, which growing up means I told everybody that I had four moms. They were wonderful at making sure that I was dressed appropriately, that I was following the rules, that I was doing my homework. It was kind of horrible, actually, to have three older sisters. But seeing that I had three older sisters, I had to play the ultimate role of annoying little brother. And I did this wonderfully. I'd go into their rooms, I'd search through their desks, I'd read their diaries, I would rummage through their purses, and you learn quickly, never touch a lady's purse. I would muddy their rooms, I would do everything I can, I'd find turtles or snakes outside and put them under their pillows. I would do whatever it took to fill the role of annoying little brother. But my sisters were smart and strong, and they were a good little unit together, and so they would get back at me. One time in particular, I remember they convinced me that I was adopted, that I did not belong to this family. They walked me over to my dad's desk. They opened up one of the big wooden drawers and they pulled out a file folder that said Richard's adoption. And inside were beautiful legal documents all written up in Crayola crayon, sharing the details of my adoption. And I wept. My mom, of course, came to the rescue and put everything straight and showed me that legal documents are not really written in Crayola crayon. Showed me my family birth photo albums and all these different things to assure me that I was indeed part of this family. Well, my sisters and I get together now and we laugh. We laugh a lot. We laugh a lot about the things we did to each other, the pranks we pulled, the things we said, the things we did, and we laugh. But the truth is that so often in family dynamics, the things that we do to each other, the things we say, the ways in which we treat our siblings or they treat us, the way in which we relate to our parents and they relate to us, the way we relate to our children, and they relate to us. It's not always a laughing matter. In fact, sometimes it brings great pain. Tremendous pain. Deep wounds that we carry with us through life because of something somebody we love said or did or didn't do for us or to us. That's really the story of Joseph this morning. A story of a man that was deeply wronged by the people that he loved. Now, we're going to walk through the narrative of Joseph a little bit this morning, and I have to warn you, I've been given 13 chapters to preach on, so buckle in and enjoy the ride. That's a lot of text to cover in one morning. But I do think we need to understand the story of Joseph to get to the verses that Matt read us this morning. And the story of Joseph begins in Genesis chapter 37. If you have your Bibles, I'd love for you to open up to Genesis chapter 37 and follow along as we walk through some of these chapters together. If you have your smartphone or tablet and you want to open up on that, great. We won't think you're texting your friends. We'll just believe that you're reading the Bible with us. The story begins, Genesis chapter 37, the story of Joseph. We meet Joseph when he is 17 years old. He is one of the sons of Jacob, the same Jacob that Travis preached about a few weeks ago, the story of Jacob and Esau. Jacob has four wives, one being his favorite wife, Rachel, and one of those sons, indeed, is Joseph. And we learn quickly that Joseph is Jacob's favorite son. But we don't just learn that Jacob loves Joseph. We learn that Joseph's brothers hate him. They despise him. They detest him. They will not say a kind word to him. I had to ask myself the question, what did Joseph do that they hate him so much? Well, there's sort of three main reasons why Joseph's brothers hate him. The first is that Jacob used Joseph as a spy, as a tattletale. See, Jacob sends out Joseph's brothers to the fields to tend the flocks, to walk the land of Canaan, sometimes for weeks at a time, making sure that the goats and sheep can graze. But Jacob knows that his sons aren't always up to such good. And so he sends Joseph out, and he says, Joseph, go find your brothers. See what they're up to. Find out what they're doing wrong and come back and tell me about it. Well, no sibling likes a tattletale. And so Joseph's brothers have learned to hate Joseph because he tells on them. But it continues, and in the narrative we learn that Joseph's brothers hate him because of some coat that he got. We all know the Broadway musical, maybe, Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, right? Well, Joseph gets a coat from his dad. Now, you've got to think, why does going and shopping at the Burlington Coat Factory make his brother so upset? But Joseph gets a really special coat. You'll notice in all of your translations, there's almost always a footnote because we don't really know what this word that describes this coat means. Was it bright? Was it colorful? Did it have rhinestones all over it? Had it been bedazzled? What was it about this coat that made the brothers so angry? When I took a Christ in the Old Testament class in seminary, I had a professor named Dr. Gordon Hugenberger. He's the professor. He's a professor at Gordon-Conwell. He's a pastor at Park Street Church in Boston, a famous church right on the Red Line. If you've ever walked the historical line in Boston, you've passed the Park Street Church. But Professor Hugenberger had a theory about this. He was into Hebrew words. He loved trying to figure out the deep meaning behind them. And as he studied the ancient Near Eastern text, he looked at this word that described this coat, and his thought was that this coat meant, or this word describing this coat, meant that it had large hems. Now, if you're like me, you're thinking, why would brothers be upset about large hems? When I think of large hems, I think of my sister's corduroys that I'd have to wear that my mother would hem so that they would fit me. That's why I didn't like large hems. But in ancient times, fathers would actually sew their son's inheritance into the hems of their jacket. The larger the hem, the greater the inheritance. And when Jacob gives Joseph this coat with large hems, he's saying to all of his brothers, all of his older brothers, not only is Joseph my favorite, but he's going to get everything that I have. Oh, Joseph's brothers hate him. He's a tattletale. Our father loves him more, and he's going to get everything that's rightfully ours. Well, that's not the only reason they hate him. They also hate him because Joseph starts dreaming. And in Joseph's dreams, they're all about the brothers one day bowing down to him. Can you imagine the younger brother that says, "Hey, I had a dream that one day you're going to worship me." Those little brothers get beat down. And that's exactly what Joseph's brothers did. You see, the Joseph's brothers were out in the fields again one day, and we read in this narrative that Jacob grabs Joseph once again and says, "Hey, go spy on your brothers. Make sure they're doing what they're supposed to." Joseph puts on that coat with large hems, and he sets out to find his brothers. Well, his brothers see him coming, and they devise a plan. They say, "Let's kill him and throw him in a well. Let's throw him in a pit and leave him there." One of the brothers says, no, we can't kill our own brother. Let's just throw him in the pit and we'll figure out what to do with him. So Joseph arrives, they rip that coat with large hems off of him and they throw him in a pit. The brothers see a caravan of Midianites coming and they devise a plan. Let's sell Joseph. Let's sell Joseph into slavery. Let's sell our own brother, our flesh and blood. And for 20 shekels of silver, they hand Joseph over to these Midianites. And the Midianites caravan down to Egypt to sell their goods and the people they have into slavery. Well, the brothers know Jacob needs a story. What will their father think? Where did Joseph go? So they take that coat and they cover it in blood. And they hand it to their father. And their father weeps and wails and mourns because he knows that his favorite son is dead. But Joseph isn't dead. Joseph is on his way to Egypt. And I wonder what Joseph was thinking as he walked shackled to that caravan to Egypt. Was he angry? Was he plotting revenge? Was he trying to figure out how to escape? Was he weeping the whole way? I wonder what Joseph was thinking and feeling as these wounds from his brothers set in. The narrative tells us that the Midianites sold him to Potiphar, the captain of the guard. And Potiphar puts Joseph to work. And what we'll learn in the story of Joseph is that whatever Joseph starts doing, God blesses. And Joseph goes to work in Potiphar's house, and everything he touches becomes great. Potiphar puts Joseph in charge of everything. In fact, Potiphar says, "Joseph, you can take care of everything except for the food I eat. No good Egyptian would let a Hebrew touch their food." And so all Potiphar does is worry about what's for dinner. And Joseph does everything else, and Potiphar's wealth grows. But Potiphar's wife notices Joseph. And Potiphar's wife throws herself at Joseph. We learn in this narrative in chapter 39 that Potiphar's wife continually, day after day, goes up to Joseph and says, "Joseph, come to bed with me. Joseph, sleep with me." And Joseph says no. There's an interesting proverb, Proverbs 23:27, and it says this. It says, "A prostitute is a deep pit, and a wayward wife is a narrow well." Joseph knows what it's like to be in the bottom of a well. Joseph knows what it's like to be in a pit, and he resists. He doesn't want to be in a pit again. And he keeps saying, "No, no, no." But eventually Potiphar's wife, she devises a plan. She clears out all the other servants and attendants. She throws herself at Joseph yet again. She grabs onto him. She grabs his coat, his cloak, and he flees. But once again, Joseph's coat will be used to tell a false story against him. For Potiphar takes Joseph's coat and exclaims to Potiphar, "Joseph tried to rape me. Look, I've grabbed his coat. I screamed, but he ran." And once again, innocent Joseph has a coat that tells a story that's not true. And Potiphar burns in anger, and he throws Joseph in jail. The Hebrew word for dungeon being the same as the cistern, Joseph finds himself in a pit yet again. I wonder what Joseph was thinking this time. Twice now he finds himself in the bottom of a pit. Twice now he finds himself without the robe that he had been wearing. Twice he's at the bottom of a pit wondering, why is this happening to me? I wonder if he would just give up. I wonder if he would just grow bitter and angry. But Joseph goes to work. And even in that prison, the warden sees that everything that Joseph does is blessed, and so he's given more and more responsibility. And he's given all of this. But then an interesting thing happens. Two new prisoners come to Joseph's care. See, Joseph's in jail, but he's also in charge of all the prisoners. And two new prisoners come, and we read about that as we move forward into chapters 40 and 41. See, there's a cupbearer and a baker who work for Pharaoh. Now, I don't know what exactly a cupbearer and a baker do to get thrown in prison. Too many raisins in the raisin bread? You know, not the right pairing of the wine with that night's meal? But Pharaoh, for some reason, gets angry, and he kicks the cupbearer and the baker into prison, and they're under Joseph's care. And Joseph cares for them. And the cupbearer and the baker start to dream. And they're unsettled by their dreams. And they go to Joseph, and Joseph says, "Tell me your dream, and with the Lord's help, I will interpret." The cupbearer tells his, the baker tells his, and Joseph interprets. And he says to the cupbearer, "Great news for you. In 3 days, you are going to be freed. You're going to be reinstated to your status, and everything will be okay." But he says to the baker, "Not so good news for you. In 3 days, you're going to be beheaded, and it's not going to look so good." Well, exactly what Joseph says happens. The cupbearer is reinstated. The baker is killed. But Joseph tells an interesting thing to that cupbearer. We read about it in the 40th chapter, verses 14 and 15. It should come up on the screen. Joseph says to the cupbearer, "But when all goes well with you, remember me, show me kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this prison. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a pit, in a dungeon." You can feel Joseph's pain. As the cupbearer leaves that prison, you wonder if Joseph was waiting by the prison door. "Maybe the cupbearer will remember me. Maybe he'll talk to Pharaoh." But the narrator continues, and 2 years pass. Can you imagine the hope that Joseph felt just for an instant? And then 2 more years of waiting in the pit to be rescued. Pharaoh starts having dreams, and no one can interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And the cupbearer finally remembers Joseph. He sends for Joseph. Joseph is shaved and cleaned. He's given appropriate clothing to wear before the Pharaoh, and he stands before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh tells him his dreams, and Joseph interprets. And he says, "Pharaoh, you are going to have 7 years of great prosperity. Your fields will grow great grain. There will be an abundance. But then for 7 years, there will be great famine. And Joseph urges Pharaoh, put somebody in charge to store up so when famine comes, you can be ready. Well, Pharaoh looks at Joseph and says, you're the man for it. And in these amazing verses, at the end of, or in the middle of chapter 41, the narrator writes this. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. What a story. Twice Joseph's robe had been taken. Twice Joseph had been put in chains. And now, in front of the Pharaoh of Egypt, Joseph is given a robe of fine linen and not chains that bind him to a caravan headed to Egypt, but a gold chain and a signet ring signifying his power and his authority. If this was a Hollywood story, you could end it right there. Joseph's redeemed. Joseph back in power. Joseph with a brand new coat again. But so often, it's 39 years into our life when the pain of our past comes busting through again. When Joseph's 39, the story continues, and now his brothers come. And Joseph is overcome. See, Joseph has been doing a great job. It says that Joseph has stored more grain up than there is sand. And when you live in Egypt, that's a pretty good description of a lot of grain. He's stored so much grain up, he doesn't even keep track of it anymore. And now that the famine has set in, all of Egypt, all the countries of the world are coming to Joseph. Joseph is loaded. He's making money hand over fist. He is powerful. Chariots go before him saying, clear the way. Here comes Joseph. And his brothers, looking for food, come and they kneel before him. His dreams come true from childhood, and he's overcome with pain. He weeps bitterly. I resonate with the story of Joseph. I resonate with the reality that pain from long ago can bubble up into our lives, can sort of surprise us. We act out in anger, or we head to bad habits, or things happen in our lives and we find ourselves weeping, thinking of pain from our past. And here Joseph is hit with it as his brothers kneel before him. And there's not enough time to go through the detail of the story, but we land in chapter 45 in the verses that Matthew read. And we read this. Come close to me, brothers. I am your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. Do not be distressed. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. It was not you who sent me here, but God. Is that a miracle or what? Like, think of what Joseph could do in that minute. Like, there are his brothers, the ones that beat him up, took his coat, threw him in a cistern, and sold him for 20 pieces of silver. And there they are. And Joseph is standing, the second most powerful man in all the world, the man with the key to all the grain, the man with all the money. And with one word, he could say, hey, kill these thugs. And instead, the words that come out of his mouth are, don't be distressed. It wasn't you who sent me here, but God. I find it incredible. I find it miraculous that Joseph could have this perspective. That he could feel all that pain and anguish from the past and somehow come to a place in his life where he says, you know what, guys? It wasn't you who put me in the pit. It was God. It wasn't you who had this plan. You may have had this plan to destroy me, to hurt me, to kill me. You may have meant evil, but God used it for good. In chapter 50, at the end of our story, Joseph will reiterate this to his brothers. And in verses 19 and 20, he'll tell them again, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." How does one gain that perspective in the pit? I got to tell you, if my sisters threw me in a pit and sold me to Egypt to be a slave, I think I'd be plotting revenge. I think I'd be angry. I think I'd be bitter. But Joseph looks at his brothers and says, "I forgive you." God had great plans in all of this. How do we get there? How do we gain that perspective in the pit? Well, as I studied this reality this week, as I studied these chapters in Genesis and realized that God is bigger than any pit we find ourselves in, I saw three things that really stuck out to me. The first one I saw is that there is pain in the pit. There is pain in the pit, that these wounds that we feel from these broken relationships, they really hurt. More than 15 times, the narrator tells us that Joseph wept. Yesterday, during a basketball game, I was coaching my sons in upward basketball. My 10-year-old son, Hudson, it was near one of the end of the quarters. Time was ticking out. He got a face to the head. They were going for a rebound. And I could tell that it probably hurt him a little bit. But he dribbled down the court. He tried to make a last-second shot. It was really close. It didn't quite go in. But he came over to the bench, and he just started crying. And you know what I said to him? I said, "Stop crying. It doesn't hurt." What is that? And I realize that we do this all the time to our kids. We do this to ourselves. We say, "Stop crying. It doesn't hurt." But you know what's true about being at the bottom of the pit? It hurts. And yet we grow up telling ourselves we're not supposed to feel pain. We're certainly not supposed to show pain, right? And I do this to my kids. Last year, our small group did a study on our emotions and how do we parent our kids through our emotions. Let me tell you, it's not looking at your kid that's crying and go, "Don't cry, it doesn't hurt." That is not the right way to parent your kids through their emotions. But that's the way I deal with myself with those emotions. I tell myself, "Don't show pain. It's not supposed to hurt." But Joseph wept. It hurts to be in the bottom of the pit. And if we don't acknowledge it, what happens is that pain seeps up in our lives in other ways. Like Steffi Fisher said in her video, comes out in anger, in rage, in bitterness. And if we deny the pain that we're feeling, it won't serve us. Because when we acknowledge the pain, it's an invitation for Jesus to come and work in it and to heal it and to help us figure it out. There is indeed pain at the bottom of a pit. But there's something else I noticed. God is present in the pit. It's amazing how many times in this story the narrator says, "The Lord was with Joseph." I highlighted a few of them on a slide maybe, or maybe I forgot. We'll see if it shows up. In chapter 39, right after Joseph is thrown in the pit by his brothers and sold to Egypt, the narrator says, "The Lord was with Joseph." And then again in verse 21, at the end, when Potiphar's wife falsely accuses him and Potiphar throws Joseph in prison, the narrator writes, "The Lord was with him." I don't know about you, but when I feel like I'm at the bottom of a pit, one of my first questions is always, God, why have you left me? Why have you abandoned me? Isn't that what we do when we feel that much pain? We must think, God has forgotten me. God has left me. But the narrator wants us to remind us that God is present in the pit. Yeah, we feel tremendous pain in the pit. But God's presence is there with us. And if we acknowledge his presence, if we invite his presence into that pain, then maybe we can gain Joseph's perspective. Because I also notice that Joseph believes that there is purpose in the pit. That even though Joseph has found himself in the bottom of a pit twice without his robe, that God has purpose in it. I was amazed at what Joseph named his sons. It tells us in chapter 41, verses 50 through 52, that after taking a wife, Joseph had two sons. The first he named Manasseh, the second Ephraim. And sort of loosely translated, it means this. Manasseh means, God has made me forget my troubles. And Ephraim means, God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. I wish that I could gain that perspective. I wish I could see that there is purpose in the pain. There is purpose in the pit. That Joseph recognized that God made him fruitful even in his suffering. Is it really possible that God works through pain? Is it really possible that God works when we find ourselves at the bottom of a pit? As I studied the story of Joseph this week, I realized that this is the gospel story. That God being bigger than the pit is best realized in the reality of Jesus Christ. That Jesus Christ, like Joseph, was sold for a few silver shekels. That Judas turned him in for 30 shekels of silver. And after they stole Jesus' robe, just like Joseph, they beat him. They whipped him. They put him on a cross and they killed him. And Jesus went down into the pit, the ultimate pit. But 3 days later, he came busting out of that pit. And he came back to life. And he proved that God is bigger than the pit. And God used that pit to bring salvation to the world. Not grain in the storehouses, but the bread of life to humanity. That all who are hungry can come to him and feast and find life. Because God is bigger than the pit. There is pain in the pit. But God is present in the pit. And if we invite him into our pain, if we acknowledge him in the pit, then we will find purpose. Because after Jesus rose from the dead, he said, I am with you. I will always be with you. As I studied the narrative of Joseph this week, I realized that God is bigger than the pit and he is with us. Maybe this morning you find yourself in a pit. Maybe you feel like your pain is so great. But may you realize that even in the pain, God is with you. And he is bigger than the pit. We're going to sing a song together and Tommy's going to come back with the band. And the song says just that, that no matter what, no matter what high or low we go through, God is with us and God is bigger than the pit.